This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder. A widespread investigation of reports from funeral homes, morgues, and hospitals has concluded that the unburied dead are coming back to life and seeking human victims.
You're listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, Australia's only LGBTI program focused on the horror and sci-fi community.
Welcome to a night of total terror. Night of the living dead, the dead who live on living flesh, the dead whose haunted souls hunt the living.
Representation is really important. You know, like, we need to reflect, you know, the genuine mix of people in our society and not always hold up this imaginary template in which whiteness becomes somehow the universal norm and everyone else ends up excluded from that. I think racism as a theme is connected to the history of the modern zombie from the 30s onwards. So I saw it as a good lens for examining the new wave, unfortunately, of Islamophobia. Yeah, I see it as a type of cultural exegesis, like using popular culture, in this case the figure of the zombie,
yes,
as a vehicle for social criticism. Do you still get nervous?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I still get
this time.
I'm fangirling right now.
Okay.
In your presence.
Right. Oh, okay.
I'm a fan. Okay. I get nervous about artists in my presence, good ones.
Oh, don't be nervous.
Okay, well, we'll get started. This is Sonia for Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. And I want to welcome the amazing Safda Ahmed, Walkley Award winner, co-founder of the Refugee Art Project, and so many other things.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, we're going to find out an awful lot more about you in this special interview and podcast. And what on earth is a guy like you winning a Walkley Award for? Let's start there. How did that happen?
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I guess it was supported by GetUp, who did a crowdsourcing campaign for alternative journalism about the refugee issue called The Shipping News. And I think they supported about 14 stories. And mine, fortunately, was one of them. So I did a documentary webcomic about my visits to the Villawood Detention Centre, which I've done for many years on behalf of the Refugee Art Project. And so it was a good opportunity, I think, to depict the physical environment of the detention centre, because journalists aren't allowed in, cameras and recording equipment isn't allowed in. So that's one issue, I think, around detention centres. How do you actually show what's going on inside them? And luckily, I suppose, I already had very good relationships with many of the asylum seekers and refugees there, having visited for years and doing art workshops there. So it was a good opportunity to collaborate with them in depicting their stories. In one or two cases, I actually got some of their original artwork into the comic rather than for me to represent everything they were describing. So it was a really wonderful opportunity, I think, to try and show something of the ordinary daily life experience of being in a detention center and how depriving and depressing that is and how that affects people's mental health.
Now, the people you do at the art workshops there, are they always artists that come forward to participate in that at the,
no,
at the detention center?
Most of them have never made art before in their lives.
Okay.
Only in one or two cases have they been artists before they came to Australia.
Mm.
And so many of them haven't drawn a drawing or painted anything before. And so it's a really interesting opportunity, I think, for them to develop a skill. Many of them have this sort of innate skill, but have just never had the opportunity or the chance to express themselves that way. And I think, I hopefully, for them at least, it gives a sense of immersion and relaxation, which is what the activity of drawing can do, even in a stressful environment. And for many, I think it gave the excitement of at least being able to express themselves through their creativity and their art to the Australian community, which is really the objective of Refugee Art Project, to hopefully amplify the self-expression of refugees in detention in order to challenge the misconceptions that exist in the broader community on that issue.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And so for the Walkley, what was the piece that you did for that?
Yeah, it's called Villawood Notes from an Immigration Detention Centre, and it's up on Medium. Anyone can see it. If you just Google that or Google Villawood comic, you'll probably find it. And of course, it was published by GetUp. Fortunately, it did well last year. Certainly didn't expect for it to even be shortlisted in the Walkley Awards, let alone win the artwork category, which was amazing.
Mm.
And I think a good thing for comics journalism to be taken seriously as a form of journalism. It's highly regarded in countries like France and many European countries, but here it's still quite a new thing. Another very good example is Sam Wallman and Pat Grant's Serco comic, which was a comic from the point of view of a whistleblower, someone who'd worked in a detention centre, talking about their experiences of that. So I think it's a new genre in Australia, but hopefully it'll get more recognition, and hopefully at least the success of my comic will hopefully encourage that.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. I mean, when it was coming up on the Facebook feed, on my Facebook feed, I was very excited that you were recognised finally for this work.
Oh,
and
thank
it's
you.
Really important that it gets out there.
Yeah.
You know? And like you said, off air, you was mentioning that it's also a good show of support for independent
definitely
artists.
Yeah, I think it was last year's Walkley Awards held in December, but I think mine was the only award for that night which wasn't from or part of a major news organization. So I think it's good that an independent person such as myself and hopefully others can have that sort of alternative forms of journalism acknowledged.
Yeah, excellent. Now, just a little bit on your background for our listeners. You identify as an Australian Muslim?
Yes, that's right. So my family on my father's side are Indian Muslim.
Oh, wow.
And my mum's British, and dad and mum met in England.
Mm-hmm.
And I was born in Liverpool in the UK, but grew up in Australia my whole life. So we migrated here when I was a little baby.
Right.
But I've done a PhD in Islamic Studies at Sydney University. And I guess that was my work as an academic was also a way to sort of understand the different types of or different interpretations of Islam around the world. I was looking at the intellectual history of modern Islamic reform. So that's an interesting subject. It's related very much to post-colonial movements. So it's in that field, I think. A lot of modern Muslim movements were responding to European colonialism and imperialism and all of those conditions. Mm. So, yeah, I'm a bit of a geek for history. So I think that's,
perfect.
That was really enjoyable. Yeah.
Have you used that more in your artwork?
Yeah, I have been able to recently. So it's in the last few years I've got back into comics in a big way. And I've always loved comics ever since I was a teenager. And so more recently, I've produced a zine called Muslim Zombies, which looks at...
I'm looking at that. It's hilarious, like amazing. Yeah. And
I see it as a type of cultural exegesis, like using popular culture, in this case, the figure of the zombie, as a vehicle for social criticism. So the zine gives some historical context to the poster series that I did, which are pretty confronting and pretty out there. But I've always thought horror movies and horror tropes provide an interesting lens to sort of critique society. And certainly, ever since 9/11, there was an explosion of zombie films, apocalyptic zombie films, which often have parallels to the sort of political anxieties surrounding the war on terror.
It's a virus. It's contagious.
Exactly.
It'll eat your brain.
Yeah.
Those sorts of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had so much of that, haven't we? Like, Walking Dead is a living example.
Yeah.
Ongoing of, you know, a series that just keeps coming.
Yeah.
They keep coming.
That's right.
These zombies.
That's right. But if you go back to the George Romero movies, I think they're really fascinating because in most of his movies, he's using the zombie theme to raise some sort of criticism of society.
Yeah. So, the first one was Night of the Living Dead.
That's right.
About the civil rights movement in the US and
exactly. The main actor was a, that's right, black American, but he wasn't a stereotypical, you know, black person. He sort of had a certain dignity, but at the end of the film, he was shot by a troop of a white militia who were clearing the land of zombies. And the parallel to lynching is really strong.
Yeah, and the film, a very deeply disturbing film, and probably shows how horror can say the things in the fictional form that perhaps you can't get away with any other way.
Yeah, I think so, and help you kind of understand society in, in a deeper way.
Because it's a terrible scene. They throw him on a fire, don't they?
That's right, exactly.
It's just...
As the credits are rolling.
Yeah, really.
And even if you go back to the 1930s, the zombie enters popular culture from the experience of colonial Haiti with White Zombie, which is the earliest zombie film and some of the novels produced in that time. And that was reflecting American anxieties around slave revolts, essentially. And it was associated with this exaggerated fear of voodoo religion.
The unknown, yes.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that fear just keeps coming through Hollywood films all the time.
Yeah, so I think racism as a theme is connected to the history of the modern zombie from the 30s onwards. So I saw it as a good lens for examining the new wave, unfortunately, of Islamophobia, which you're getting here and in Europe with all these groups such as Reclaim Australia and, you know, Rise Up Australia and United Patriots Front and all of these ultra-nationalist, extremely xenophobic groups who are really kind of consuming a totally distorted version of the world and a idea of Islam which is so removed from reality. It's very close, in fact, to traditional anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish anti-Semitism in the 20th
very
century.
True.
With the, you know, halal food conspiracy theories and all of that. So, yeah.
I do love, I just speaking about your horrific drawings here, horrific artwork, Stop Islamo-Fascist Zombie Nation or Zombieization.
Yeah,
it's just brilliant. Very graphic.
Yeah.
What's the response been like? How have people
Oh, I think people get it. I think I'm obviously exaggerating people's fears of Muslims to satirize them ultimately. So I think
zombie boat people, they jump queues to jump you. Whoa.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, and we've got a depiction of a it would be a bit like Freddy Krueger's face if he was just skeletal.
That
looks like the Freddy Krueger hat. A little bit. And even the birds look like they're infected.
Yeah, that's right.
Like zombies who are crawling across the ocean in a very strange-looking boat.
Yeah, that goes back to 9/11, of course.
Yeah.
The very day after the attack, you had Peter Reith, who was then a minister for the Howard government, directly implicating asylum seekers with terrorism, saying this is why we need stronger border protections. So.
And the damage that does...
Absolutely.
You know, people don't realize the damage of words, the damage of particular stances that people have, like people that we're supposed to look up to, respect, politicians. Might be hard to do that sometimes, but at the end of the day, they do announce things, and when they do that, it gets reported, and when it gets reported, obviously it becomes the fodder for the masses and take what they want from it. And unfortunately, that's where hate can
Well,
hate can be produced.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
And you can see that with the number of federal politicians who've jumped on the anti-Islam bandwagon in recent years.
People very like dangerous. Very
Corey
dangerous.
Corey Bernardi and those sorts.
It puts people at risk, their safety and communities under a microscope that they wouldn't have been under in any other situation if this hadn't happened.
And if anything, just sends those communities the message that they don't belong in Australia, and makes the whole situation worse because you're alienating a new generation.
Exactly.
So where's the point in that?
Alienating. Alienating. Exactly. That's really what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, your work certainly is totally awful in this one, this respect, but I love it. I think it's really important. But you're tackling some, I guess, topics as well, which are particular for the community, Islamic community. Stop creeping Sharia law, you know, stop creeping Sharia. I mean,
yeah.
Muslim zombies. Can you tell us a little bit about that piece?
Sure. Well, with these posters, they're sort of designed like horror film posters.
Yeah.
So they're supposed to look like the next...
Remind me of Fulci. Fulci? Zombie?
Okay.
Yeah. Lucio Fulci.
Oh, yes. The Italian...
When zombies were shufflers.
That's right. Yeah. Very slow shufflers.
They move too fast now.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yes, sorry.
Yeah, but the actual wording of these posters and the terms that I'm using are all taken from the far right. It's terms that they've created, which to me have a weird sort of intersection with the horror genre. So
true.
Creeping Sharia is a favorite term for people, especially in the United States, who have this idea that Muslims are somehow trying to surreptitiously subvert liberal democracy and secularism, you know, with often just based on the most simple things like, you know, wanting to build a new mosque somewhere or something like that.
Yeah.
So often anything a Muslim does
or
is
schools.
Seen. Yes, that too.
And I mean the queer community. The queer community can relate to that with the Safe Schools Coalition and the fight back backlash against that. It's very similar.
That's true. Yeah, and it was so hysterically detached from any genuine concern for the well-being of children, wasn't it?
It's just madness, to be honest. It's like it's basically saying, if you're against those Safe School Coalitions, this is my opinion, it's basically saying you have no right to protect your children.
Yeah, that's right.
From bullies.
Exactly.
And to make school safer for all children. It's basically saying it's okay to bully.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's when I've put my foot down and I've drawn the line with a certain organisation over that.
I see,
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. It's them holding on to their negative definition, which the whole campaign was, I suppose, undermining by trying to treat queer kids like other kids who are bullied, or at least a certain, you know, subsection of kids who are bullied. And grossly unfair.
Very similar, you know, kind of developments there. Xenophobia, homophobia.
Yeah.
These phobias don't come out of, you know, mist or air. They actually are, in my opinion, generated by a lot of hate, misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Obviously confusion, and in some cases for the queer community, it can be confusion with the person's own sexuality, as we've discovered in the US.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
How many Republican senators have been caught on Grindr and so on? It's becoming too obvious, and it's like, please seek help. I mean, if you're not happy with yourself, then you don't have to spread that.
Yeah. It's also an unfortunate consequence of what happens when these issues are seen not as simply as moral issues, but are politicized and become political issues. And, of course, to go back to the example of asylum seekers, that's exactly where you see it all going wrong. You know, it's been so heavily politicized, we can't just look at it as a human rights or social justice issue.
Exactly.
If only you could separate it from, you know, from the political rhetoric, which is so poisonous.
Pure common sense.
Yeah.
Needs to be reestablished. Yeah. Earlier today on the old Facebook, I was called a militant... hysterical witch.
Oh, right.
Good one. Yay.
Jeez.
All because of the safe schools thing, or because I'm just saying what happened in Orlando could have been prevented, perhaps, and we need to look at protecting people and those sorts of issues. And it is, like you said, it's a moral issue.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not anything else. It doesn't even matter if you're... Well, it matters if you are a gay person, but it doesn't really matter. We just have to... put some very tighter controls, or the Americans need to, on their gun.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
On the guns.
For sure.
Quite frankly. I mean, we're pretty lucky so far in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. And I suppose I would add to that that I hope if there's any good sort of fallout or consequences from what happened in Orlando, it might be that even amongst Muslim communities, there'll be some questioning and self-examination of the homophobia that exists in those communities.
Do you think that will happen?
I don't know. I think there is a bit of discussion amongst the Muslim community here in Australia, for instance, as well. Mm. Some people have publicly come out in support of LGBTQ Muslims in the wake of the shooting, understanding that, you know, they're sort of caught, I think, by two forms of prejudice. Homophobia within their own communities on one hand, or within the broader community, because homophobia is that widespread that, you know, can come from anyone.
Yeah.
But also being Muslim, being seen as the enemy within for those that are exploiting it as a terror attack.
It's a double whammy.
Of course, it's the double, exactly. And but nonetheless, I certainly hope even within Muslim communities there'd be some reflection on the just the widespread homophobia that exists. I don't see – I mean, I suppose conservative religious attitudes are a source of homophobia. But having said that, I think there's just – a lot of it is the social homophobia that isn't religion-specific as well, which so many people just unthinkingly adopt, unfortunately.
Yes, they jump to that conclusion pretty quick.
Yeah, so I don't think Muslims are exceptional for that.
Definitely not.
But at the same time, I think all communities, you know, still have a long way to go.
Yeah, I think there's certainly more examination needed, but it's like any community. Within that community, the people within it should be the people that are... I guess, have the autonomy to do it the way that they feel is the best way.
Yeah.
Because if there's outer influences and outer, you know, controls, then I guess after everything that's happened since September 11, we might just end up fueling more misunderstandings and more hate. I don't know. But
yeah. It certainly highlights the importance as well of giving a voice.
Exactly.
To the minority within the minority, to LGBTQ Muslims who are, you know, struggling from so many different types of discrimination as well.
I mean, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but in Turkey there won't be a pride march as such. They're not allowing it, the authorities, so to speak.
Yeah.
Last year was pretty violent. I don't know if you saw any of the footage, but, like, just for people to have a march, it's... They were getting the water cannon and various other forms of physical harm onto them. And it's kind of a shame that, it is a shame actually, that they've banned it outright.
Yeah.
Because, again, it sends a message that they don't have a right to march. They're saying that it's to protect them, but to protect them from
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, unfortunately.
From the authorities, it seems, so.
Yeah, and under the Erdogan government in recent years, Turkey's become so much more authoritarian. So, yeah, I guess that's...
Do you see a time when that will hopefully through a new system or a political system that might change?
Well, I think sporadically we've seen over the last number of years democratic, genuinely democratic street movements in the across the Middle East, both in the Arab world, in Iran with the Green Movement, and in Turkey with the Gezi Park uprising. Mm. So these things... I think have become a lot more prominent just in the last decade. And I don't think they're going away. So I think overall I try to be optimistic about the consequences of the Arab Spring and the Green Movement in Iran and all of these other movements, because there is a very intelligent, educated generation, younger generation of people who do want genuine political participation. And how that will play out remains to be seen. But I think those forces aren't going away. So I think there will be, you know, moments of civil society sort of rising up, you know, in the future. We'll just have to see how it plays out. It's very hard to remove an authoritarian regime, as we can see, as you can see in Syria, for instance.
Yeah.
So hopefully things won't go as bad as it has there. But certainly, yeah, I try to be optimistic about the Arab uprisings of over the last number of years. I think generally there are good signs for the future.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a positive. And like I said, it's those communities themselves. It's good to see that change, because you can't, I'm an outsider, so it wouldn't be right for me to say they need to change, you know.
Yeah, it's happening.
Well, happening.
I think we in the West just need to recognise it and support it. And sadly, many of our governments don't. They will always side
with the refugee issue as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll choose security, quote unquote, over a genuine democratic process. Mm.
And for you as well, like, obviously you have been almost, you know, you could say the grassroots, the coal face. You've met people who have escaped these authoritarian places.
Sure.
They don't want to be there. They've made this huge step at risk of their own life and their families and so on to come to Australia.
That's right.
You must hear these stories, horrendous stories, certainly, all the time.
Yeah, and I think that's the great shame of what's happening here in this country. Mm. The fact that, you know, so many people have come from Iran, escaping a very repressive government in Iran, or in the aftermath of the Sri Lankan War, which happened in 2009, during the war and afterwards. Not to mention people who've come from Iraq and Syria and many refugees, Hazara Afghan refugees fleeing Afghanistan and Pakistan, as well as Rohingya Muslims fleeing the genocide that's taking place in Burma.
Mm.
So we're getting people who was, you know, fleeing some of the worst persecution in the world, and yet for such a developed, well-off society, for such a well-off country, it's a shame that we're leading the way in the meaningless persecution and punishment of
asylum. Well, it's punishing people who've already been punished.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
You don't just decide one morning you're going to risk everything to leave your homeland, your motherland, your fatherland, whatever, and to take a very precarious journey.
Yeah, that's right. And totally against
all
of
that. You just don't do that just overnight.
A lot of
process and thinking.
And they come because they believe we're a signatory to the United Nations Refugees Convention. Mm. Therefore, we will respect their human rights. And unfortunately, we're not. And that's quite obvious. You know, even the United Nations High Commission Against Torture described our offshore detention centres as cruel and unusual punishment. So it's official now. We're actually torturing innocent people in Nauru and Manus Island. So it's awful to see what's happening here.
Yeah. And your artwork, of course, has brought a focus onto that. What sort of response do you get? Does it change people, do you think, when they do look at your work? Do you feel?
I hope so. I think that's the power of art generally and storytelling. And I've certainly noticed that looking at how the Refugee Art Project has gone with presenting the artwork of asylum seekers and refugees themselves to the public. I think that sort of work affects people directly, whereas people can often ignore what they think is a political argument, you know, and say, oh, you're just being a left-wing, bleeding-heart, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you confront them with something as direct, you know, as a drawing by an Afghan refugee about the persecution they've faced from the Taliban and show those narratives and show those experiences, then I think that affects people directly, and that's something they can't deny. And that's something they have to think about critically and reflect on. So I do think that's the power of art. I think important social movements need artists and writers and poets to engage in that sort
of
work.
And have the freedom to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which we still have, I guess. I'm not a published artist.
Well, we're facing a lot of arts funding cuts.
Yes, so that's tough. Now, speaking of that, you're here in Melbourne because you do not reside here.
No.
Though you should. No, that's a plug for Melbourne. You've been here for the Emerging Writers Festival.
Yeah.
So what were you doing specifically
there? Oh, that was fantastic. So I was on two panels for that. One was about art and social justice writing. So I was able to speak about my work in the Villawood comic in the context of social justice writing in Australia.
Cool.
And that was fantastic. And the other panel was about comic art specifically.
Oh, cool.
With Tommy PG, who does brilliant comics, as well as Miranda Burton, who did a wonderful book about her experiences with working with people with intellectual disabilities. So we spoke about the different dimensions
of that. We've
had both of
them on the show.
Oh, you have? Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good community for sure, and both of them are excellent artists.
Yeah, I think the Australian underground comics community is really thriving.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, and it's addressing so many interesting issues. Of course, it doesn't all have to be serious, and it's not. Some of it's just really creative and wild and diverse. But It's, to me, it's a utopian community because it's driven by people who have a very strong vision and they're not, I guess, a part of the art market, if you like. A lot of it is just autonomous work that people feel they need to do. And it's really exciting to be a member of that community.
It's interesting. I was at the Ledgers and there were people there who were from the commercial market and they were just going like, oh, this is so great.
Oh, wow, really?
And we would love to do collaborate and with other people there. So it's like, that's really interesting. They these people work at Marvel or DC and they want in.
Okay, there you go.
But it just shows that it's working. And
I think so. And there's a growing market and interest in it, which is great. Yeah,
definitely. If DC or Marvel came to you and said, would you say no? Would you say yes?
It depends on the genre and how it could be tweaked.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, if I could do a politically incisive story, I'd love to, yeah. And there's an American lady, she's a convert to Islam, G. Willow Wilson, who does some wonderful fantasy novels.
I'll have to look that up.
And she was the one who Marvel brought in to recreate Miss Marvel as a character. And that was a good example of her creating a character that reflects more diversity.
And it's done so well.
Yeah.
Right across the broad spectrum, I
think. That's right. So instead of Miss Marvel being this white blonde, you know, bombshell, she's the daughter of Pakistani immigrants struggling, you know, I guess at different levels to feel a part of society and to reconcile her, you know, her cultural heritage with American sort of, you know, mainstream America. And so it's a really, it's a really lovely treatment of that.
I believe they're extending its run, and that's a really sign.
Yeah.
There's also a black Spider-Man now too.
That's right.
These are good signs.
Yeah, I think
it's
symptomatic of popular culture becoming more sensitive to difference.
Yeah.
You know, and diversifying the superhero genre as a part of that.
And it'd be great to see if LGBTIQ or queer characters don't have to die.
Of course.
All the time.
Absolutely.
It's like, oh, they can't have a marriage or they can't have what they choose to have, a relationship with someone of the same sex, whatever.
Absolutely.
That might take a little bit longer, but it's, you know.
Yeah, hopefully it'll get there.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the genius of art. When it works, it can really make a difference, I think.
Oh, for sure.
And you don't know. There's some young kid out there who may identify as queer who's seen those images. Or, like you said, it might be someone who's of refugee background and sees Miss Marvel and so on and so on. And what a thrill to know that might help that person, that young person.
Yeah, definitely. You know? I think, you know, the politics of representation is really important. You know, like, we need to reflect, you know, the genuine mix of people in our society and not always hold up this imaginary template in which whiteness becomes somehow the universal norm and everyone else ends up excluded from that. I think Hollywood still has a long way to go. As
quite
we know,
a long
they've
way,
got
yeah.
a lot of casting issues.
Yes.
Especially with movies set in the Middle East, for instance, that all feature, you know, Anglo or Anglo-Celtic actors. So,
and actually Polynesian actors.
Okay.
As well.
Yeah.
Get roped in to play people
they?
Of Arab descent.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. It's not the greatest. Right. I know it's work, but there's got to be, you know, a change there too,
I
think.
Just if, I mean, honestly, cast the person
according to... Because you're brown skin doesn't mean...
Yeah, exactly.
really interesting. There's a long way to go, but I think we just have to keep pushing and be, you know, take our witch hunt and keep going.
Yeah.
Be hysterical. Why not?
Yeah, raise your voice, exactly.
Raise your voice, and that's what your work does. Now, if people want to find out more about what you do... the Refugee Art Project, where can they go online? What's the best?
Oh, sure. Refugee Art Project, that's the name of the group. So if you just Google that, you can find the website. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and a couple of other platforms. And if you want to see my work, then that's at my website, which is just saftarahmed.com.
Easy to find. And a message for, I guess, for people out there who still think art can't change anything and may think that, oh, you know, it's all about pretty pictures. Why can't you do pretty pictures? What have you got to say to them?
oh, look, art can do everything. You know, on one hand, I don't think art should always be instrumentalized for political ends, especially because I feel very influenced by the underground comics tradition, which isn't always political. It's often just absurdist.
Autobiographical. Which can be crazy.
Which can be really weird. Really weird. Exactly. And not enlightening. No. You know? And it's all about people's, you know, sexual hang-ups and most sort of revealing personal dimensions of their personality.
How they like their coffee. I saw one about that once and it was like, it was about 30 panels and it was just, bitching about coffee.
Oh, there you go.
Well, there you are.
Yeah.
So, it was the way that they bitched about it was pretty cool.
Okay.
Because that's it. That's the perspective. And it's not like a movie. You can actually...
Yeah.
It's more personal.
Yeah. So I'm attracted to art which just sort of presents individuality in some way. I think the role of art, it should be a critical, subversive thing. But it doesn't always have to be political. It can just be taking the piss or
it can
be pretty
pictures.
Is
this taking the piss, though? Is this Hazine Death Metal Jihad? What is this?
Oh, I mean,
you mentioned it. I'm gonna grill you about that.
Okay. Oh, so What's going on here? A band that I formed with my friend, who's also an academic in media studies and a comic artist himself, Can Yalçınkaya, who lives in Sydney as well. He's of Turkish background. And together we formed an extreme metal, black metal band.
Of course.
Very punk-inspired, anti-racist band, which again subverts people's fears or confronts people's fears around Islamophobia. So we dress up in corpse paint. We put on stage
blood. It's very Kiss-like with the makeup. I'm looking at it now, and it's a picture that looks very... If Kiss was demented black metal.
Yeah, that's right. That kind of embodying the zombie, I guess.
Embodying the zombie.
And the object of fear.
And so what are the sort of names of songs? Can you tell us?
Oh, we've got songs. We've got one called Creeping Sharia. Called Beneath the Black Crescent Moon, which sort of intersplices
the
kind of horrific black metal mythology with contemporary Islamophobia. One about Australia's asylum seeker policy that we call Sovereign Murders, quoting Scott Morrison's Slip of the Tongue.
Right.
Which would be an appropriate name for that policy. So, it's a performative, intense, extreme way of confronting, you know, the ugly Islamophobia that we see, I guess, in line with the zombie posters that I mentioned before.
And will you guys actually play live yet, or have you?
Yeah, we've played a few gigs. We'd love to come to Melbourne. If we do, we'll definitely play in Sticky Institute. They're keen to host us. The zine
room
store.
it's
a little small.
It is. And they're wonderful. But yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic. Yeah, and I think people enjoy the act. And we love the music, and it's got a strong political anti-racist message. So I think, you know, music.
Are there many bands like that in
Funnily
Australia?
Enough, not that much. I mean, there's a few really good punk hardcore bands. There's a great one in Sydney called Dispossessed. We're friends with them.
Yep.
And they really confront. They've got a fantastic indigenous guitarist, Birrigan, who even does Welcome to Country in language.
Wow.
And so they're really good, and they're very political and very intense. I think they refer to their music as post-colonial power violence. So I guess we're kind of in the...
Post-colonial power violence. Wow, I have to remember that. That's awesome.
So we see ourselves sort of, in a similar direction to where they're going.
Cool. Excellent. But there's nothing available yet for people to...
Oh, not yet. We're going to record soon, and we're working on an animated video clip. So hopefully in the next... few months at the most.
So you can animate. You do animation.
Yeah,
as well.
That's right. Yeah.
Safta, is there anything you don't do? This man is so talented. I can't tell you. I'm just lost for words, which is unusual for me.
Oh, thank you. This is the least talking
I've ever done.
Oh, thanks so much.
No, it's good stuff. So, okay. Well, good people out there who are listening, you should definitely check out what Safta is doing. Refugee Art Project, just Google that or put it in any old search engine will do. Find out about Muslim Zombies, his comics and zines. Find out about Islamophobia and basically the stand against that Safta does as well as the community. And, get into his work, please.
Thanks so much, Sonia. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. So thank you so much for speaking to us here on Sci-Fi and Squeam. You've got some horrific work, which we love.
Yeah, I think horror can be used to good ends.
It can in this case. That's excellent. Thank you so much, Seftar Ahmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chief, if I were surrounded by 6 or 8 of these things, would I stand a chance with them?
Well, there's no problem. If you had a gun, shoot them in the head. That's a sure way to kill them. If you don't get yourself a club or a torch, beat them or burn them. They go up pretty easy.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
You've been listening to a podcast of Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Check out joy.org.au/sci-fi-and-squeam for more.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.